A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you're with me on the program today. It is a snowy day here in Central Virginia. And I guess across a good portion of the Mid-Atlantic and even the Midwest as well. So hopefully you are warm and dry. We are keeping our fingers crossed that the power stays on. I don't really care how much snow we get. I just want to make sure that the light and the heat are still with us here throughout the next couple of days. So fingers crossed that that happens. We're going to be talking with Benjamin Shore on the program today. I mentioned Ben yesterday. Ben is with a group called the Rise Against Hate. In fact, he's one of the co-founders of this organization. And as you will hear, Ben saw some research that Bearing Arms contributor John Petrolino did. This was, gosh, I guess early last summer, like last May, John started investigating the concealed carry process in New Jersey, specifically looking at the denial rates of carry permits. And what he found was that black applicants in New Jersey were about twice as likely to be denied a concealed carry permit as white applicants. So the group of Rise Against Hate and Ben Shore decided to do some more digging. And they have spent the past several months going county by county, again, looking at the approval rates, the denial rates, and what they found, honestly, it's a much bigger problem than what we first thought. And John's research indicated it was a big problem already. But according to Rise Against Hate, the disparities in who is getting a concealed carry permit in New Jersey, it's even worse than we first thought. Take a look and a listen. Ben, thanks so much for coming on the program. It is good to finally meet you. You and I have been corresponding a little bit via email over the past few months, but it's good to finally put a face to the name.
Absolutely. Same here. And I'm happy to be here and I'm looking forward to speaking on this very important topic.
It is a very important topic. And first of all, let me just say thank you for recognizing the importance of this and for doing this research. You know, John Petrolino, who's a friend of mine, Bearing Arms contributor, he did, I think, really good grassroots journalism by taking a look at the data that was available on the Attorney General's dashboard and noticed that there was this problem. Is that how you sort of got interested in what's going on with the permitting process in New Jersey?
Yeah. So at first, our organization had seen this report that he had released. And, you know, we found the statistics to be rather alarming. We had our team of data scientists, immediately look into it. And the more information we gathered, the bigger the problem was that we realized. So, yes, we are thankful that John put that out there and we were able to learn about this issue.
And I mean, when you talk about how serious this problem is, I went back and I was looking at John's original report and he talked about black applicants twice as likely to be denied as white applicants across the state of New Jersey. When you go down to the county level, Ben, there are some counties where there doesn't appear to be any racial disparity whatsoever. But then there are other counties where black applicants are, 53 times more likely to be denied than their white counterparts?
Yes, that's correct. When adjusted for population size in Ocean County, that is surely an issue. And even looking across the state, it's approximately more than 10 times.
I mean, again, this is so let me ask here. Let me play devil's advocate for a second. What about the argument that, okay, well, maybe black applicants are 10 times as likely as white applicants to have problems, right? To have felony convictions, to have been adjudicated as mentally defective, to be prohibited persons in some way, form, or fashion. Is there any way that could explain the disparity in these numbers?
Yes, that's a great question that's raised. But, you know, what's really important is that these permit to carry applications are people who have already obtained their FID. They have already completed the first step. So very important to recognize is that all these individuals have already passed the qualifications. The only difference is that now it's having another level of discretion and the most subjective disqualifier contrary to public health, welfare, or safety is one of the largest catch-alls. And that discretion, I believe, is what is causing this great issue. Because certainly it doesn't make sense why, you know, all these individuals who have already successfully passed the first round to get the firearm ID card now face these new barriers for the permit to carry. Likely nothing has changed. It's just, the discretion and the way the investigation goes, it has unfortunately resulted in this outcome.
You know, and I'm glad that you explained that, that again in New Jersey, because a lot of folks, you know, who are watching this don't have to deal with New Jersey gun laws, quite frankly. And so they, you know, they're really draconian, right? So in order for you to get a concealed carry permit, you have to, as you say, first obtain that firearms ID card. So you've already shown, you know, you've already gone through a background check, right? You've shown, okay, I can exercise my right to keep arms, but New Jersey has an additional step if you want to exercise your right to bear arms. And that's when, we get into that discretionary policy, which, as you all, you know, note in your report, the Supreme Court said in the Bruin decision in 2022 that discretionary policies basically are unconstitutional, right? They may issue policies. You're not allowed that. Objective criteria, sure. But the subjective criteria where a licensing authority can say, I just don't really think you're suitable. I don't really think you've got the temperament or good character to be a gun owner, not because of any, you know, felony convictions or anything like that, but just because, it could be anything and everything. Right. I mean, they are allowed such broad discretion that in some cases we don't even know why folks are being denied.
Yeah, definitely. And part of our research, something concerning that we came across, is that by some police department's own admission, they have found this, contrary to public health, to actually be discretionary and subjective. And they've actually said that despite, you know, as you mentioned, Bruin explicitly stating that it needs to be objective criteria. So if you do, you know, when you look at the report, you'll see that, you know, we cited two different police manuals for investigations and frequently asked questions. And at least one police department, you know, straight up acknowledges that their process is subjective. And unfortunately, that is not what the court has set forth.
So what are you hoping comes about as a result of Rise Against Hate's deep dive into the data here?
So the results that we found are, you know, of course, alarming and very disturbing. You know, your race should not define a constitutional right. So it's incredibly concerning that for some individuals in some counties, you know, they are being denied compared to white applicants at a rate as high as, you know, 53 times, with a statewide average over 10 times more likely to be denied. And the big one is this, you know, subjective, contrary to public health, welfare, safety catch-all. And when you look at the stats, I mean, that is the one the police are using. And unfortunately, you know, these are all individuals who have passed the first round, you know, have shown that they can qualify. And only when they're applying again, our police department starting to exercise this discretionary rule, which unfortunately has led to these huge systemic racial inequalities within the permitting system. So we're hoping that the state will realize that, hey, this is actually not an objective test. This is subjective. We need to change this. And we also hope that more from a public policy that the state will take interest and say, you know what, your race should not define your constitutional right, and take actions to address that. You know, one of the tests that we performed, and you can read about the different methods and data analysis that we use from our data experts, but they were able to conclude with a high degree of statistical certainty that race is a factor in your ability to carry arms. Race is a factor in the police department's decision based on some of the statistical tests that we did.
You know, and again, I would encourage folks, we've got a link to Rise Against Hate's research at BearingArms.com. You can go to RiseAgainstHate.org and you can find it there yourself. Will you be, or your organization, Ben, be proactive in presenting this research to the New Jersey Attorney General, to the governor? Will you be sending them these reports? Or are you going to just kind of hope that they stumble across them? I mean, what are you going to do to make sure that lawmakers and stakeholders are actually aware of this problem?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we definitely do want to raise awareness about the issue. And, you know, having folks like you that are, you know, taking the time to speak about these important studies and discoveries is an important factor. We do also plan to send out our studies to, you know, relevant government bodies, including, you know, the governor's office, the legislature, and other, you know, relevant, you know, advocacy organizations to take a look at it. We are looking for partnerships for other individuals that are interested in combating these racial disparities. And hopefully we can work together to try to achieve a more just system where your race is not going to determine your ability to exercise a constitutional right.
Absolutely. Well, again, Ben, I commend you and your team for the research. It is eye-opening. It is disturbing. And it is something that needs to be addressed. So thank you very much for everything you're doing. I'd love to have you back at some point in the future. Just let me know when you've got something new to report, and we'll have you back on the show.
Awesome. Thank you so much again. And I appreciate being here, and I appreciate the important work you do to raise awareness to important issues like this.
Thanks so much, Ben. We'll talk again soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
My thanks to Ben for joining us on the program, and I am glad that they're going to be sharing this research with stakeholders like Attorney General Matthew Platkin, maybe Governor Phil Murphy. Now, I don't expect that we're going to get a response from the Attorney General's office, quite frankly. But again, it's pretty clear that there are some departments in New Jersey that are continuing to use, at the very least, the subjective standards that the Supreme Court said were not appropriate when approving or denying carry permits. And there is a lot more work to be done in the Garden State. Unfortunately, again, majority of lawmakers in New Jersey have no problem with this. Apparently, they've got no issue with this. Now, I'm sure that they would like to see the number of white applicants who are denied rise as well, right? They don't want anybody carrying. But they don't seem to have a problem with the disproportionate harm that is being done to Black New Jersey residents when it comes to exercising their Second Amendment rights. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We will start there with a story out of Charlotte, North Carolina, where a man has been charged with shooting at bystanders during a string of Charlotte car break-ins. These weren't really bystanders. I mean, they saw what was going on. They tried to stop the guy, and then the guy shot at them, is what happened here. According to, let's see, this is, I want to make sure I get this. There we go. Queen City News in Charlotte, North Carolina. This is back on February the 4th, about a week ago. Resident of an apartment complex noticed a man who was breaking into multiple cars in a parking lot. He and other residents tried to confront the man, and police say that's when he shot at the residents. Responding officers say they heard of a car break-in that had been committed not too far away by someone of the same description as the shooter, and they were able to arrest Damarian Caldwell in the area. According to police, he is reportedly linked to several other break-ins, as well as targeting vehicles with valuables and firearms inside. He's currently charged with 3 counts of assault with a deadly weapon, 4 counts of breaking and entering in an automobile, 2 counts of felony larceny, and assault by pointing a gun. According to authorities in Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, Caldwell has a, quote, extensive history in Charlotte and beyond, including charges of robbery, aggravated assault, and possession of stolen weapons. So here's the thing. Damarian Caldwell is 20 years old. He's 20. So how does a 20-year-old, first of all, have an extensive criminal history, including charges of robbery, aggravated assault, and possession of stolen weapons, and is out on the streets of Charlotte? He's 20. Unless Mr. Caldwell was committing these crimes and he was like 13. And even then, if he was arrested and convicted of juvenile felonies, he could have been held behind bars until he turned 21. I am struggling to figure out why on earth a 20-year-old would be at this point a career criminal and yet still be on the loose and able to allegedly commit this latest crime. No word on any plea deals that Caldwell has had in his past, but I guarantee you they're there. And I guarantee you that instead of going to prison, Caldwell was sentenced to probation and a slap on the wrist, maybe a short stint in jail, maybe a credit for time served while he was awaiting trial. But rather than the book being thrown at Demarius Caldwell, he got a kiss from the criminal justice system instead. Now on to today's armed citizen story from Fort Worth, Texas, where police say a man who broke into his ex-girlfriend's apartment was shot and killed by the woman's companion. This was over the weekend. And I got to say, I ran across this story about 2 minutes after I saw another news story about a woman in Nebraska who was shot and killed by her ex this past weekend. She had an order of protection out against him. Apparently, he chose to violate that order of protection. Shot and killed her, allegedly, in front of a child. You know, those stories are so horrific and heartbreaking. And frankly, they are one of the reasons why I am such a strong advocate of self-defense, particularly when it comes to people who are facing abuse. You know, there was a bill that was introduced in Virginia a couple of years ago. It didn't pass, unfortunately, but basically it was a simple bill. If you had taken out an order of protection, you could get your concealed carry permit expedited. And I believe you could have carried on an emergency basis for like a week or 10 days while you were going through the process of obtaining your carry license. Again, that bill did not become law in Virginia, but I would love to see that law in place in every state of the union, maybe even at the federal level, although we don't, again, have a federal right to carry laws. I'm not sure how that would work. But in this case, in Fort Worth, the ex-boyfriend, again, shot and killed after breaking into his ex-girlfriend's home. This was a Sunday morning. Officers dispatched to a shooting in the 2900 block of Watermark Drive in Fort Worth, Texas, about 11:30 on Sunday morning. When officers arrived, they found the man on the third floor landing of an apartment building. Detectives say the guy had broken into his ex-girlfriend's home and then had confronted the ex-girlfriend and another man as they were about to enter the apartment. I'm not sure if he was still in the apartment when they, you know, tried to open the door. But according to police, the man who was with the woman pulled out a handgun, fired multiple shots at the intruder, shooting him at least once. The man identified as 37-year-old Michael James Andre. Police say that no arrests have been made. The individual who shot the intruder cooperated with the homicide investigation. Based on what the authorities have reported to date, I would be shocked if this was ruled anything other than an act of legitimate self-defense. Again, this guy had broken into his ex-girlfriend's home. He did not have the right to be there. They did have the right to be there. I'd say that you're in justifiable fear of your life when you open the door to your apartment and a stranger, well, not even a stranger, but your ex is standing inside. But we'll keep our eyes open for any more details as they become available there in Fort Worth, Texas. And finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a Kingman, Arizona man who saved a woman from a burning car. You can see there just a little bit of a screen grab of the vehicle in question that apparently had struck a another car. Police believe that the driver may have suffered a brain bleed, which caused her to drive incorrectly. Dylan Stevens ran across the scene. He was on his way to work in Las Vegas last Thursday morning. And Steven says he assumed that the crash had just happened. He thought that someone was inside because he didn't see an emergency vehicles at the time. He said, I was screaming and pleading. She's going to die if we didn't get her out. He pulled over, stopped the car. There were other passengers or other passerby who had stopped as well, but they apparently did not get involved, at least at the moment. Steven says he was hearing tapping on a window. She believes it was the woman inside who was trying to get his attention. He couldn't see inside the vehicle because it was dark. The windows were tinted. He tried to break the window, said he really struggled with it, but finally was able to get inside. And then when he was able to get there, he realized the woman is now hanging upside down in this overturned vehicle. She's dangling from her seatbelt. Dylan Stevens was not able to unbuckle the seatbelt, but he did have a knife and was able to cut the strap. He says, when I did, she just immediately dropped all the way to the bottom of the car. He then was trying to get the woman out through the car window. The doors wouldn't open. He said it was very hot, very hot. He said it was a little hard to breathe. He says there were other people on the scene who were watching this, but they didn't help him at that point. Excuse me. Sorry about that. And he said after several minutes, he was able to get the woman out. He says that's when other passerby stepped in to help carry the woman away from the burning car. He said the flames went through the passenger compartment, the driver's side of the car, just a few seconds after he pulled her out. And again, according to police, they haven't really determined what led to the head-on collision, but they suspect that the woman, again, might have been suffering from a medical condition. They say that impairment is not suspected, so they don't believe this was the result of, you know, drunk driving or doing drugs and getting behind the wheel, but instead a medical emergency. But in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. Dylan Stevens there in Kingman, Arizona. We thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company, and I want to thank you, as always, for being a part of the program. I'm looking forward to being with you tomorrow, knock on wood, that we've, again, got power and heat. Long as we have power, I don't really, I mean, I'll do the show if we don't have any heat, but if we have power, I'm pretty sure we're going to have heat. So anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing you again tomorrow, but also be sure to check out BearingArms.com throughout the day. We're keeping you up to date on all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP, VIP Gold, or VIP Platinum member. You get all kinds of exclusive benefits, but you will also be supporting the independent pro-Second Amendment journalism that we're doing at Bearing Arms. And your support is greatly appreciated, so thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your 2A Tuesday. We'll see you here soon. Until then, be well, be safe, and be free.